Hello and welcome to the Sonic Cinema Podcast. My name is Brian Scuttle. Thank you for joining me at www.sonic-cinema.com, as well as wherever you listen to the Sonic Cinema Podcast, whether it's the YouTube channel, Spotify, Apple, Good Pods, and basically wherever you can listen to podcasts, you'll find us. Any subscriptions, likes, shares that you have for the podcast is always appreciated, and you can also, in addition to that, you can also find my print reviews at Sonic Cinema. You can also join us at patreon.com/Sonic Cinema. Hopefully I do plan on having everything caught up as we get into the fall movie season with regards to the Atlanta Film Festival, whether when it comes to series like Leaving the Collection and Life Soundtrack, but any appreciation for that if you are a subscriber to patreon.com/Sonic Cinema. So this is, in a way, this is a long-awaited return of a franchise to the podcast. We have not talked about Star Wars since Rise of Skywalker. Not through any fault of its own, necessarily. It just has turned out that way. But we are talking about a much better project in the new Star Wars saga as it exists, and that is the television series Andor, which ran its second season on Disney Plus earlier this year. Joining me is a filmmaker whom I've had the pleasure of meeting a couple of times at the Renegade Film Festival. He was there several years ago with his short film Love Bite, and he was there again this year with his short film Honk. He has also done DV producing over the years. You will know his work from projects like Blade Runner, the Alien Anthology, and recently Alex Garland's Civil War. Please welcome to the podcast Charlie De La Zarica. Charlie, thank you very much for joining me.
Happy to be here.
So I wanted to ask you a couple of quick questions about your career before we get talking about Andor. And the first one is, how did you get involved in doing DVD production? Because I know several of your releases in particular were some of the most expansive that we had gotten in the first decade or so of the medium.
Yeah, thanks. I guess it was the right place, the right time. I was at USC Film School and getting ready to graduate. I needed to find a job, obviously, like we all did. And I just started interning like crazy. I interned for several companies, but the one company I really kind of locked in with for years was Scott Free, which is Ridley and Tony Scott's production company, and worked in development and then kind of started doing some more interesting projects. And that led to the DVD kind of launch of the Alien set. And I was, you know, really a serious DVD collector by that point. And even though it was only like about 6 months or several months into the origin or the beginning of the first year of DVD. So anyway, I told Ridley about it, and he was leaving to go film Gladiator, so he put me in charge of that first Alien DVD release in 1999. And then that just began this whole series of DVD and then later Blu-ray projects of, you know, kind of supervising to begin with and then eventually producing the making of documentaries, the deleted scenes, the commentaries, all the extras, and then occasionally the director's cuts of some projects. And then that led from working with Ridley and Tony to other directors like Michael Bay and David Lynch, which are two names you don't usually hear together, and you know, several others. So it was kind of just a interesting side trip that I was on for about 20 years, and I still do it occasionally, but yeah, that's kind of the quick answer.
Okay. I also want to ask you about your short films, because I have seen Love Bite, I have seen Honk, and I really enjoy the differing tones of both of those. Like, one is a little bit more horror, zombie, a little bit little bit more of a little bit of comedy in there, but then the other one is more of a psychological horror film, that being Honk, which stars Alec Galligan. What is it about genre films in particular, and this will kind of, we can kind of start leaning more into the subject at hand. What is it about genre in particular that interests you as a filmmaker?
Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting way to view the real world, depending on which genre you're picking. And in some cases, you can create hybrids that are really, really interesting. But it's all a way to examine sort of like where we are as a civilization and as humans. And I should say, before those two shorts you kindly mentioned, I directed a feature called Crave that starred Josh Lawson, Emma Lung, Edward Furlong, and Ron Perlman. And that was really multi-genre. Like, that was all over the place. It was comedy, it was drama, it was horror, it was romance, it was action. It was like, it was basically everything. And I've been asked, you know, why that film. I was just kind of tonally and genre-wise all over the place. And my half-serious answer is, I didn't know if I was going to get to make another film after that. So why not try a little bit of everything? And that's sort of why I think when I started doing these shorts, I wanted to mix it up and try different things just so that I could learn what I'm interested in as a filmmaker, see what maybe I'm good at and then what I'm not so good at, and then try to, you know, do better the next time with the, you know, the weaknesses I perceive in what I'm able to do, but also enjoy the strengths. So when it came to Honk, for example, I had been dealing with this notion of like Crave being really all over the place genre-wise, and then Love Bite being both kind of a dark post-apocalyptic movie, but also kind of a political relationship satire. And I kind of had the feeling I needed to pick a lane. I needed to like do one film that was all in on one tone, one genre. So Honk came out of that as a kind of a horror drama, you know, and something that was very psychological, very emotional, but basically one tone. And I'm pretty happy with it. I don't know if I'll do that again anytime soon, but I'm glad I got to do it. And I'm glad I had actors like Zach Galligan and Tyler Mane and my wife, Carly Baker, who's also in it. I'm really glad I had them to, you know, collaborate with.
Okay. So I think I want to pivot now and move into the topic at hand, that is Andor. And I want to do it with this question in particular. What is it to you, as I'm guessing as long a fan of the Star Wars franchise as I am, what is it that makes the project, the films, the TV series that you love in Star Wars, the ones that you love?
Well, I mean, you know, like a lot of middle-aged dudes and boys and girls and people of our age, I was there at the beginning. You know, I saw Star Wars opening weekend in May of 1977. I saw it at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood. So I was there, you know, at the flashpoint of Star Wars fandom. And it's been a long, interesting relationship I've had with the Star Wars franchise. And it's not always been, you know, a positive relationship. There was definitely some dark times in there. But what I've found recently, in the wake of Andor, actually, is what I really, really love about Star Wars is the notion that ordinary people can impact the galaxy in extraordinary ways. And I love looking back at Star Wars, A New Hope, and The Empire Strikes Back, as when I look at the Rebels in particular, that they are just regular folks. I mean, Luke aside, they're just regular people just doing their best to fight against tyranny and oppression and fascism and all these things for freedom, for the good of everybody. And I love that these are people that, again, we later had enhanced for us via Andor. These are people who had like regular jobs, regular lives, and they were kind of caught up in this galactic conflict. So in the subsequent years after Star Wars and Empire, and maybe a little bit in, with Return of the Jedi, but I started becoming a little bit, not disinterested, I'm always interested, but maybe learning that robes and lightsabers and Force and Jedi and Sith are just things that are overused, in my opinion. I just have this saying that I use in my job quite a bit, which is, if everything is special, nothing is special. And I think that when you've got, you know, three prequel movies and then a number of, you know, streaming shows that focus, you know, mostly on the Jedi and the Sith, the Force and its magic and its mysticism and all these incredible things that the Force is capable of, it kind of loses its power because they keep going to it so often. And every time you pull out a lightsaber, it's not like this amazing, crazy, badass moment anymore. It's like, oh yeah, lightsaber, Jedi, they use that, don't they? So it's kind of like I felt like it was all getting diminished in a way because they kept going to these things. They kept going to the candy and the treats and the snacks and not giving us protein and like good food. So when Andor comes along, it was just amazing to me that finally, for those of us, maybe it was, again, because of the age of us, is that it's something that harkens back to the original film about ordinary people and extraordinary circumstances that had to fight tooth and nail to try to save the galaxy. And Andor is all about that. And that's why there are no Jedi in it, as far as we know. There's very minimal references to the Force. And I really love that it's just people, you know, people fighting oppression. And to be honest, it's also fascinating to watch the Empire's side of it and to see their, you know, approach, their procedural approach to things. So that's why I was in love with Andor season one and season two. I still am. I mean, I still think it's one of the best Star Wars projects ever created. And I really appreciate they went deep on the machinations and the human cost of this war.
Yeah, I can't agree more. And, you know, a history for me with Andor is I got screener links for, I think, the first three or four episodes, I can't remember, and I watched the first few they had, and I really liked them, but then for some reason I just was not able to, it was hard for me to keep up with watching as many films that came out, doing the podcast, all of that stuff, so I had a hard time keeping up with the series. So when season two was coming out, I was originally going to do my full season one watch beforehand. Then that didn't happen for a wide variety of reasons. And so this summer I'm like, I am absolutely watching Andor. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go all the way through. And I absolutely love it. And it is truly one of the best things we've gotten in the Star Wars franchise ever. I mean, not just Disney produced, just ever. I mean, and I think the idea that it is ordinary people working within the confines of what their social status to try to build the rebellion, that's one of the things I think I love the most here, is that, I mean, there have been other series like Rebels and stuff like that that have toyed with the idea of the rebellion kind of going on after the events of Revenge of the Sith, but you feel like this is the film that truly is laying the groundwork for what the rebellion in New Hope, Empire, and Return of the Jedi was and what it was going to be. And obviously this is a prequel to Rogue One. And the thing I think one of the things that you touched on as far as what you love about Andor is also one of the things that a lot of people loved about Rogue One, is that it gets away from the idea of the Jedi and the Sith and lightsabers. I mean, the Force is mentioned and the Force is a part of some of the characters, but the fact of the matter is it's secondary to this really intricate adventure story. And the thing that so impressed me about Andor watching it is the fact that this is truly an origin. It's funny because of the fact that to a certain extent, this is an origin story of really kind of two characters. You have Cassian Andor, Diego Luna's character, and his origin story kind of takes place during season one. By season two, he's very much a part of the rebellion. He's very much in the intricacies of building the rebellion in leading up to Rogue One. And then you also have Mon Mothma, who is a senator who's using her own personal funds to help funding the rebellion while working with through the Senate to try to keep things from getting worse until there's no point in the map. There's no question that she has to make a definitive choice as to whether she's going to remain in this system or be apart from it.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you had told me back in 1983 that you know, the briefing lady from Return of the Jedi was going to eventually be one of the most fascinating, interesting characters in all of Star Wars, I'd say, you know, you're insane. But that is the case. I think, I mean, there are so many characters, both new and old, that just have benefited from Andor, and Rogue One benefited from Andor. I mean, I rewatched Rogue One immediately after season two of Andor ended, and it's in my mind, it's a better movie in retrospect. I liked Rogue One when it came out. I didn't love it. I definitely had some issues with it. And now watching it again after Andor, the portions of the film that I had, you know, some nits to pick, went away. It's like, it was kind of like, oh, now I get the kind of the, you know, the inside baseball of the war. And I get why we're following Cassian Andor, who in Rogue One was, I mean, he was okay, but he wasn't like super captivating as a character. And now he was after you watched Andor, then suddenly, oh yeah, I'm fully invested now. And it's really interesting to see, you know, the Tony Gilroy of it, you know, in those early days of Rogue One, kind of where he was starting to make his influence known. And then after seeing it in full bloom in seasons one and two of Andor, it's a more cohesive experience. And I would say, I think I did the math, and I don't know if the math is absolutely correct, but I believe that if you do a minute count from with Andor season one, Andor season two, and Rogue One versus all nine Skywalker saga films, there's only a 5-minute difference between the two. If you had told me this, you know, even, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, that I would prefer the Andor saga over the original Skywalker saga, I'd say you're insane. And yet here we are. It's like, I do think the Andor saga is a more coherent and interesting and intelligent look at this war, this particular, you know, Star War. And don't get me wrong, the Skywalker films are a blast. They're so much fun when they're working like tip-top A-plus filmmaking. It's just when they're not working, it's really painful, you know? And I can't think of anything in the Andor stories that is, you know, something I don't want to watch or something I'm like, you know, really embarrassed to mention, you know? Whereas there are some moments in the Skywalker films that I am kind of, you know, sorry to have seen happen. So, it's okay. It's like they're both great. If you're a Star Wars fan, there's nothing to hate necessarily, but I cherish the Andor of it all because it's like what I would consider to be true. This is gonna sound terrible. It's true Star Wars for me. And I'm sure some fanboys out there will be like, oh, that's ridiculous because the original Star Wars is true Star Wars. Well, yeah, it is, but Andor represents Star Wars growing over time. It's growth, it's maturity, mm-hmm. it's learning lessons. You know, that's the thing. It's like lessons have been learned. And with the Skywalker films, it's a series of successes and failures and successes, and it's back and forth. And I mean, that's again why I'm still a little bit annoyed that George Lucas decided to make the Jedi basically these flawed, almost evil people. But I get it. It's like that was his way of making it more interesting. That was his way of saying, look, these are not necessarily heroes, you know, that the Jedi way is not necessarily the best way. And I appreciate that, but it was just the way it was done. And especially with the prequels being, you know, I don't know. I don't want a prequel bash because I think that's like too easy for so many people, but they weren't for me. That's the thing. I chalk it up to they're for a different generation. They're for the, like all these 90s kids who love the prequels that are now, they are really loving things now. They're really enjoying looking back at Star Wars prequels as kind of a nostalgic thing. I think that's great, you know? And I love that like Ahmaad Best suddenly is not the bad guy anymore. It's like people love Jar Jar, or at least they love him for portraying Jar Jar with the passion that he did. They just have questions about the way that George wrote Jar Jar and directed Jar Jar. But it's like, you know, it's easy to say Jar Jar is a stupid character, but he served a purpose, you know, in a way. And again, I'm very happy that Andor steered way clear of that flavor of Star Wars, but I'm glad that people who love that flavor have it to enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I've got several hours of commentaries and podcasts on Sonic Cinema where you hear my feelings on the prequels. I mean, you know, look, at this point, I mean, if you basically should know how I feel about the prequels. The best thing I can say about the prequels is it gave us some pretty great John Williams music, and it also gave us a great Clone Wars animated series that up until Andor, I would have said was the best Star Wars TV series around, but I will say I do think Andor quite honestly does surpass it. And one of the things that, you know, and I think part of the reason that Andor and Rogue One works so well as a codified story arc is that obviously you've got Tony Gilroy behind the creation of Andor. He did some heavy rewriting and work in post-production on Rogue One, and that kind of he brought an interest to Star Wars that in Andor that is interesting and kind of refreshing because of the fact that he didn't want it to feel like just straight up fan service all the time. And I think he had a very specific story he wanted to tell, and it happened to align with what Diego Luna, who is an executive producer on this series, wanted to do with the character as well. And I think that's really exciting. And I mean, this is really a two-season spy thriller where it's basically you're looking at underground political maneuvering on the part of the rebellion. You have the character of Luthen, who has his own ideas of what the rebellion should be compared to what other people think it should be. And I think all of that is really fascinating in how it works out. And then you also have you get a lot of the Empire. You get a lot of the machinations of the Empire. And that is one of the things that I know other people brought up that's really, Lucas is always fascinated by the different tiers of the villainy. Like you've got the higher ups, and then you've got the people below them, then you got people below them, then you got functionaries, and all of that is really kind of fascinating in the way you look at some of these different series and movies. And you see that here with especially the character of Daedra Mero, who is an ISB agent who is determined to bring down Luthen's character, and really determined to get the rebellion squashed in a way. And one of the things that is so impressive about this series is that there are at least half a dozen to a dozen characters in this series that are just absolutely fascinating and get full arcs for what they provide to this story.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's just such a deep bench of really just really human characters, whether they're on, you know, the side of the Empire or the Rebellion or in between. And I really appreciated that everyone, even you know, even Dedra and Cyril and you know, certain members of the Empire, maybe not Krennic, but they all have aspects to their lives that you can relate to. I mean, like the episode when Dedra and Cyril have Cyril's mom over for lunch or whatever. I mean, I just feel like that is a situation many of us have been in, or a version of that situation. And it's delightful when they cut that shot and Cyril is on the bed like a little boy, just like tuned out of what's going on in the next room. All that stuff was just so relatable. So when you have relatable moments like that, even though these characters are very much on the side of evil, you do have to ask yourself, how do they end up that way? Are they going to be redeemed? You know, what's going to happen to them? And that's engagement. You know, that's engagement with the characters, and they're not just cartoon villains. You know, so I thought that was Andor's just strong suit across the board, where we got to know so many of these characters in terms of behavior and relationships, and not being, you know, telegraphed, oh, I'm a hero because I have the Force, or I wear white, or whatever. I'm a hero because of my actions and what I'm doing and the struggle I'm going through to help other people. That to me was really fascinating, and one of the reasons why I was endlessly on the edge of my seat with both seasons of Andor, when, you know, you see people online saying, oh, it's so slow, it's so boring, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know what? It's like, it's so engaging in ways that aren't, you know, pyrotechnical, you know, or in ways that aren't like blasters or lightsabers or whatever. It's less pew-pew, you know, and more think about what it is to be these people and what they're going through. And then when they come into conflict with each other, or they're endangered in some way, or you see, you know, the walls kind of closing in on certain characters, you care, and you're into it, and you're engaged. And that's why, I mean, I think the last four or five episodes of season two of Andor were just, I mean, breathtaking. You know, I mean, with the slaughter on Gorman all the way to the end, that to me was absolutely gripping television. And when you consider that that amazing escape sequence from Coruscant with Mon Mothma and Cassian, and you realize both those characters are going to live beyond this day, and yet you're still on the edge of your seat. Like, how are they going to get out of this? Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And that's the entire series was like that for me. Like, I was absolutely on the edge of my seat, whether it was a big loud scene or a small quiet scene. It was still like, there was still like a bomb, like a time bomb ticking in the corner, and you're just wondering when it's going to go off.
Yeah. No, I mean, and one of the things that's so exciting for me when it comes to one of the reasons I was so excited about the potential of new Star Wars with the Disney acquisition, I've talked about this before, is the fact that we would get new voices into the sandbox and hopefully see different types of stories. And I think, I mean, obviously, look, you know, I will always have a certain affection for the Skywalker saga. But like you said, between the prequels, between the way the sequels operated, as much as there are some of those movies I absolutely love watching, they're flawed. They also have their own ways of approaching things that are not as, sometimes the storytelling is very clunky in them. But one of the things I like about some of the shows that we've gotten since, and whether it's Mandalorian, whether it's Book of Boba Fett, which is not a good series necessarily, but I enjoyed it, is because of the fact that we get different ideas of what this universe could be like. And I love that this one, I love that Andor approaches it from a standpoint of politics, of what the building of the Empire, we get our first real glimpse of the inside of what the Empire has wrought and what the world has wrought. We don't really get that in the prequels because it's pre-Empire. And obviously in the original trilogy, it's focused more on the Skywalker saga of it. But here we get labor camps. Here we get political violence. Here we get characters who kind of have their own set of code, their own sense of right and wrong, but we, based on how they feel about other people and how they view what the Empire stands for, we get an idea of what their values are. I mean, one of the first things we see in Andor is we see Cassian kill a couple of soldiers, and that is basically what puts him on the Empire's radar, and it's also kind of what puts him on Luthen's radar as well. And so it's really fascinating to see how the characters build and the way that the world builds out around Andor. And it's just really such a, and one of my favorite aspects of it is, you know, the second season famously is basically told in mini trilogies, I guess you could say, which with each trilogy of episodes representing a different year building up to Rogue One and the Battle of Yavin. And the thing that I love about that is one of the things that was so great about Clone Wars when they started to do it, really clicked the series into another gear, is the idea that you could tell these isolated stories, but also paint a larger picture of the world. And, you know, every one of them in season two just absolutely does that so beautifully.
Well, I mean, to me, what's interesting in comparing the prequels to the Andor series and Rogue One is that I know George Lucas was, you know, often talking about how the prequels are all meant to, you know, it's all meant to fit together. It's all meant to tie in with the original trilogy. It's all meant to be one, you know, kind of like all these puzzle pieces kind of fit together really tightly. And what that resulted in was, okay, so baby Vader, little Anakin, lives on Tatooine, which is a planet we've seen a million times. He built C-3PO, which is bizarre to me.
Yeah.
And then you realize these things, like there are scenes later on in the original trilogy where basically you've got like five or six characters that all should know each other pretty well because of their various connections in the prequels. But when we saw them the first time, we didn't know that, and it worked fine. We didn't need to have these people connected. But in connecting these people, it really shrinks the universe a bit. Mm-hmm. It's like a really, what was once a grand, vast canvas is now getting smaller and smaller and smaller because all these people were basically like neighbors to each other. And then you look at Andor, which takes a lot of like tightly knit people, but then spreads out the story and the ramifications of their actions. And, you know, the galaxy becomes a much bigger place, a more interesting place, more dangerous in many ways, but also one that provides hope in the end. And I really loved that about Andor, especially season one and two, was that it made the Star Wars galaxy big again. And just seeing all like these little side stories. I mean, I've mentioned this before in other like podcasts I've done, is what I really love about Andor is when I was a kid, and before the movies were on VHS or whatever, any home video, you know, a lot of what we had were magazines and books or periodicals like Cinefex or whatever, where you would see photos of the ships and the sets and the characters, and you'd read the Star Wars storybook, and you'd get your imagery in like these kind of like static ways, right? But if you looked at the pre-production paintings by Ralph McQuarrie, they were so amazing in that they weren't just providing design, they were providing world building, where you could look at the edges of his paintings and see little hallways and corridors and just like characters, like background characters, you know, kind of like talking to themselves or talking amongst themselves, and and you're wondering who are those guys? You know, what are these people in the way in the background? Because I love Star Wars, I want to know everything about it. And Andor was that for me in, you know, like motion picture terms. It was like a Ralph McQuarrie painting in that you had the main subject center frame or close to you, but then you had all like these other characters and all these other like little back alleys and side stories that you got to finally learn about. I could probably watch an entire series just about the conference room in the ISB with these people just like backstabbing each other. You know, I mean, that was so fun and delightful and fascinating to see these bad people try to screw each other over to climb the, you know, the Imperial ladder. And that was great drama, frankly, just to see that the way that all unfolded. And that Dedra, who was fully bought in as a loyal, you know, officer of the Empire, to see her ultimate fate, which was much better than the fan theory that she was going to end up on the Death Star, seeing her in a Narkina, you know, prison cell, was beautiful, you know. And so I loved the way Andor explored the mundane, bureaucratic, you know, nonsense that we see in government in our real world. But in the Star Wars version of it, it's fascinating because it's like the drama of it is heightened in a way that we couldn't possibly know, because it involves other planets, involves other species, involves all these other plans and you know, just so many other elements that to see these people just like talking in like these ridiculously like mundane ways about, you know, paperwork and security access and why, you know, Dedra accidentally leaked the Death Star, basically, or knowledge of it. Like, things like that were so like fun for me as a viewer, but as someone who was fully engaged in the plot of it, I could watch that all day long. I mean, every time I go back and sample a little bit of Andor and I see those scenes, I lock in. You know, it's just so fun to see these bad people doing bad things that are ultimately going to be bad for themselves.
Yeah, and the thing that is so great about Andor is you don't think about anything. You could have watched Rebels, you could have watched Clone Wars, you could have watched Bad Batch, you could have watched any number of stuff that. Projects, read a number of books that happen kind of concurrently with the way in the time frame that Andor takes place in. You don't think about it. You are just enraptured in this story, and you just are thinking about these characters. And I think that is one of the greatest compliments, is that I'm not thinking, oh, well, how is this tying to things that we saw in the original trilogy? How is this tying to things I saw in Rebels? I'm not thinking about that. I'm just thinking about how is this tying to what's going on in this part of this story? And that's a credit to Gilroy as a showrunner and a creator. And it's a credit to all the cast. This is an amazing cast. I mean, I know you are like everybody else who's watched Andor. Like it's unconscionable to think. Now, I mean, granted, it's also genre, and I mean, with the exception of Game of Thrones, like genre series don't necessarily get a whole lot of Emmy love. But the fact of the matter is, there's Emmy-worthy work in this cast going, like, throughout the entire cast. Like, you could make a case for all of the major players in this series to get nominated, and it's because of the fact that they understand these characters so well, and you can tell that they are enjoying bringing these characters to life in a way that is sometimes it's hard to feel in some of the other series and movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's been It's been kind of a privilege, frankly, to see these performances by this amazing, amazing cast. And the fact that, you know, the Emmys and other awards may not always, you know, shine favorably on genre or science fiction or Star Wars. I think, you know, season two of Andor got a little bit more love, but still nowhere near enough. I mean, I'm kind of astounded that at least two or three of the casts that I thought were locks for sure on nominations didn't get nominated. So I hope, you know, the SAG Awards or, you know, Golden Globes or whatever is yet to come, that they do receive some love. Basically, I just think that down the road, people are going to remember Andor more than they remember any awards that it won or didn't win. You know, I just feel like the long haul is in Andor's favor. And I also believe that all of these actors are going to go on to greater things, because I know a lot of them were not really known to audiences before Andor, and now they are. They're known very well, and I feel like this was just the most amazing kind of audition for a huge career for some of these people down the road. And then there were some great character actors that we also maybe didn't see commonly in a variety of, you know, popular shows, but now we know that they're amazing and that they should be more than character actors. They should be lead actors. So, it was just phenomenal. Like, every single person in front of and behind the camera brought their A game. Like, and it was just wonderful to see that. And I will revisit Andor probably a number of times in the years to come. I mean, I rewatched season one before season two, and I got to episode two or three of season one. And again, thinking about the complaint online that people would have, like, it's so slow or whatever. And I thought to myself, you know what? This is amazing. And even more amazing is that it gets even better, you know, that the more it goes on, it gets better and better and better. So if you're already like whining about the first two or three episodes as it's laying down the track for the journey to come, I don't know what to tell you. It's like it's phenomenal storytelling. It's really great at setting this meaningful foundation for the stories and the characters that then get paid off beautifully later. And then Andor season two paid off season one beautifully, which both of them paid off Rogue One retroactively. Yeah. So, I think that, but going to your point about the cast, I really do think that they will all be remembered and celebrated long, long after this award season is over.
Yeah, and, you know, it says something about Andor that arguably my biggest complaint about this series, if I have one, is that the very last episode has to do so much heavy lifting towards building up to Rogue One that it almost feels like a letdown compared to what the 23 episodes that came before. I mean, but that's by design, and I still really like the episode. I especially love the fact that we get to see Bix again. We haven't talked about her character, and I love that. I love her character as somebody that inspires Cassian, and somebody that means a lot to Cassian, and somebody who believes in what Cassian and the rebellion stands for, but is just, she has things happen to her throughout the series that make it very difficult for her to be a part of it, on top of which she knows that Andor Cassian is built for bigger things and more meaningful things in this story.
Yeah, and I'd be curious to see if they develop, you know, any of these, I'm not going to call them like loose ends because they're not, but any of these kind of like stories that just sort of ended in a question mark more than an exclamation point, I'd be curious to see if they get developed. I mean, I'd love to see more of Bix and you know, her and Cassian's child. I hope they don't, you know, milk it in ways that are not in tribute to Andor. Like, I hope they don't make, you know, baby Cassian / Bix a Jedi, for instance. Like, that'd be ridiculous, right? But I wouldn't mind seeing that character become, you know, a future fighter in the rebellion. Or maybe part of this is Cassian's victory or his sacrifice is to allow Bix and their child to have a normal life away from it all. So that's what I love about like moments like the final, you know, scene of the final episode was it gave you a sense of peace and closure and serenity and hope after so much violence and so much darkness that had to be, you know, explored and had to be suffered through. And I mean that for the characters. I mean, because for me, it was gripping the entire way. But that these characters had to suffer. They had to sacrifice for this victory. And that ultimately, perhaps the victory is symbolic or symbolized, rather, by Bix's, you know, new life and the life of her child. And I think that I actually love the final episode, and I think that it's not so much that it was doing heavy lifting so much as it was just finding a way to slow the train down, you know, after it's been this express train for so long on so many episodes where it was just like fiercely, you know, plowing ahead with so many great stories and characters, that now we'd kind of reached our destination. Now we had to slow into the station for the final stop. And I love that it kind of was more, I don't know, I don't feel like it was going out of its way too hard to connect to Rogue One. And I really do love that final montage of Cassian walking to his ship, where it's intercut with the fates of so many of the characters. You know, I mean, you look at Return of the Jedi and compared to A New Hope and Empire, it's a victory lap movie. It's like, yeah. It's just like people are kind of just having a good time making this movie. And it's fun, and it doesn't really leave you with this amazing sense of, I don't know, like drama or what's next in the Star Wars saga. It's a wrap up, you know? And this, the final episode of Andor season 2, was a wrap up of its own, although far, far more, I think, artful in how it wrapped things up. Look, I think everyone got what they deserved at the end of this series, like the end of the final episode. Everyone got what they deserved, whether they were on the side of good or bad. And I really am curious about what more could be done with some of these characters. Like, for instance, I would love to see a Mon Mothma series, like post Return of the Jedi. Like, what does she do after the destruction of the second Death Star and the defeat of Palpatine and all that? It's like, I would love to see what she does, because presumably the rebellion wants to go back in and you know, save Coruscant, you know, or you know, kind of resurrected from the ashes of the Empire. And I believe she would probably be a big part of that. But that'd probably be the first time she went back to Coruscant that I know of, because I don't really read the books to the comics or things like that. But Mon Mothma going back to Coruscant to kind of reclaim it for democracy, I think that would be an amazing series, you know. So I think that there's still a lot of potential left with the remaining pieces of Andor, but I still had perfectly satisfactory closure with it.
Oh yeah, no, and don't get me wrong, like it's a minor quibble, and I probably need to rewatch it. Like once, now that I've got the series in my head, once I rewatch it and go back to that episode, it's like, I feel a lot better about this episode. It's not like one of those things where it's like, I don't feel like it's a letdown in terms of a series finale. I think it's a very successful series finale in terms of wrapping up what it did, but it also, at the moment that I watched it, felt like, it's like, okay, this is still really good, but it also kind of feels like it's, we know it has to, you know, has to do a few things to tie in Andor to Rogue One. Again, I really can't wait to rewatch this series. This is, and Mon Mothma is a big part of the reason for that. It's like, I love the performance of the character. I love the way the character's written. I love the fact that we basically are watching this woman walk a very fine line in her life throughout season one and the beginning of season two, until there gets to be a point where until it gets to the point where she just absolute with what happens on Gorm and what and where she just has to sacrifice everything. And it's just such, that would be a fascinating series to have her on. It's like, you know, I don't want to get Tony Gilroy too bogged down in Star Wars. I want him to be able to comfortably do his own thing, but at the same time, I would love to see him do that series and see where it goes. But I don't know. It's gonna be interesting to see what happens.
I think Tony Gilroy has earned his freedom. I think he can now leave the Star Wars universe and go off and do his own things, because I mean he's basically left the playbook now in terms of what good or great Star Wars can be.
Yeah.
And I think he's mentioned in interviews like, now, like, let's see a Star Wars horror movie. Let's see different types of Star Wars interpretations. But now that we've seen that you can do, for lack of a better term, elevated Star Wars or prestige Star Wars, you know, don't shy away from that. You know, I mean, embrace it, and let's share the galaxy. Let's have, you know, Skeleton Crew for kids or for younger viewers. Let's have Andor for older viewers. Like, let's, you know, it's all good, you know, and there's no reason to like hoard a particular corner of Star Wars when you've got so many characters and planets and sub stories to the main story that you can now enjoy and indulge yourself with. I mean, you know, someone we didn't talk about is the character of Clea. You know, I thought she was fantastic, and I think Elizabeth Dulau was wonderful, and I want to see more of her. You know, I'd love to see her in Mon Mothma in some story, because, you know, we don't see them in New Hope, and presumably maybe they were whisked away from Yavin in case, you know, the Empire got there or blew up the planet or whatever, but I'd like to see more of that type of stuff. But without having to bring in Tony Gilroy to, you know, again, because I think he's exhausted of Star Wars, and I think in interviews he's basically said as much, but you know, we thank him for his service, and I think that, you know, if you bring in, like, Bo Willimon or some of the other writers, so maybe some of the other Gilroy brothers, because it seems like there should be, like, a cloning facility for Gilroys for more Star Wars, but I think that now that we've seen a really great example of how amazing Star Wars can be again, I would love to see other people take a shot at it with this as, like, you know, the inspiration. Not necessarily to slavishly copy it, but to take it as an example of you can do more than just lightsabers and blowing up TIE fighters and things like that.
Yeah. And also tying it into the Skywalker saga as well. And I mean, you know, that was one of the things that, you know, and I'm sure I'll talk about it at some point, because I do want to talk about The Mandalorian on this series. But at the same time, you know, it's like I was so excited about what season one of Mandalorian did. I thought it was really fantastic. I loved it. It's like, it's clearly going for a specific genre it's inspired by and all of that stuff. And season two kind of starts off that way, and then all of the established characters from other series, other movies start tying in, and it's like, okay, so we're just building spinoffs off of this. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I get it. Get back to what made that first season so great. It's like, please. But, no, I mean, I really, one of the things that I've been very nervous about when it comes to the post, shall we say, the post Last Jedi era of Star Wars is the idea that that movie did so much fracturing to and annoyed so much of a specific part of the base that just won what it was familiar with and enjoyed what it was familiar with, that we wouldn't necessarily get to see different people playing in the sandbox doing their own thing. And I will say, one of the things that's great about Andor is that Tony Gilroy essentially didn't completely have a blank check because they basically condensed four seasons worth of, you know, they were originally going to do five seasons, one for each year, and then those last 4 years just got condensed into one season. But the fact that he was able to figure out, well, what do I need to do in this time condensation to tell the story that I want to tell with this character? And the fact that he did so well, it really should give people ideas on the types of different types of stories and the different types of storytelling that can be done in this series. And I definitely hope that Andor does point the way towards that in the future. We'll see. It's going to be interesting. But yeah, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I mean, I would just say to a lot of your points, I think that a little disruption in comfort now and then creatively is not a bad thing. On the contrary, I think it's how a franchise like Star Wars will grow and grow and grow for decades to come. I think that if you want the same old, well, you've got that already. You know, I mean, if you want to have the comfort food, then by all means, you know, rewatch the thousands of hours of Star Wars content that already exists, much of which is tonally cut from the same cloth as the original trilogy, in some other ways as the prequel trilogy. And, you know, not to start a whole new conversation, but like, I think The Last Jedi was actually a really interesting disruption in comfort. And I think it was needed, frankly, because mm-hmm. The Force Awakens was very, I think, clearly and understandably a kind of a soft reboot of Star Wars to get, you know, a whole new generation of kids who hadn't really seen Star Wars and they weren't in love with it yet, and to get their parents back. You know, it was a bit of the greatest hits album, you know, and I think that, yeah, that makes sense. And as a business decision, it makes sense. But it didn't really provide any significant growth beyond what we'd already seen. Because it was beat for beat, very, very similar to A New Hope, with little fragments of the other previous movies thrown in. And that's fine. It's like it did its job, right? It made a ton of money, and it got Star Wars back on the map. So if you see The Last Jedi and you hate it with a passion so much that you're calling the director Rian Johnson, which is the most childish thing of all time, then watch the stuff you want to watch. You know, don't spend hours online in the middle of the night screaming into the void about how you hate that movie. Because I guarantee you there are just as many or more people who did not like the follow-up to that. You know, so it's kind of like, don't pursue what you hate. Just embrace what you love, mm-hmm. which I think I think Rose said a line similar to that, right, in The Last Jedi, ironically. But I think that there's so much Star Wars now. Just really, really celebrate the good stuff that you enjoy. Because I promise, as I learned with Andor, it's like, it'll come back around. It's like you may go years without getting your particular style of Star Wars, but it'll come back around eventually. And then you'll be in hog heaven, as I am with Andor. It's like, that's my jam, you know? And I am not expecting anything like Andor anytime soon. You know, when you look at the leaked trailer for Mandalorian and Grogu, it's like, oh yeah, they're going back to the fun stuff now, you know? And that's cool. It's great. It's like, you know, I'll see it. But I'm not going to expect anything on the level of dramatic richness, say, as Andor, because I don't think that's the immediate agenda. Although I will say, given how enthusiastically Lucasfilm and Disney promoted Andor season 2 with all those Q&As and panels and things with Tony Gilroy and the cast and the crew, I do get the feeling internally, I bet they have taken serious note of how much love there is for Andor after, you know, years and years of complaints and division amongst the fan base. That I'm not saying it was a unified love, but it was definitely more unified than we'd seen in a long time. So hopefully a lot of lessons have been learned, and those lessons will eventually trickle down into actual films and shows that we can enjoy. Again, it's like, I just think it's silly to get upset about any of this. Just follow what you love, because there's a lot to love.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. Charlie, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast today to talk about Andor. Where can people find you?
I don't want to be found, Brian. I want to just hide like the rebellion. You can just find me at Lazarica. It's my last name, Lauzirika, on pretty much all the socials. Period. End of sentence.
Okay. All right. Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you. We'll definitely do it again in the future.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for letting me gush about Andor, because it's a very easy show to praise, and I'm thankful to have that kind of entertainment these days.
I'd like to thank Charlie for joining me on the podcast today. It was really great to finally have him on, and like I said, I look forward to having him on in the future. He was really a great person to talk to. And Andor was a great way to get back into talking about Star Wars on the podcast. And like I said, I really do want to bring The Mandalorian in next year in preparation for Mandalorian and Grogu, or after Mandalorian and Grogu. We'll see how it goes. It's going to be it for this episode of the Sonic Cinema Podcast. Thank you to everybody who listens, whether it's at Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you very much. Also, thank you to everybody who is subscribed at patreon.com/SonicCinema. I hope you still enjoy what I've been able to give to you. I hope to have more coming out soon. And thank you for your patience the past few months between work, between personal issues. It has been a really rough few months in terms of my personal life, and I really am grateful for the patience and the support that I've gotten from people who love listening to the show, who have been guests on the show, and I look forward to bring more great discussions. Speaking of that, we've got Dragon Con coming up, so that episode will be there. We've got more in our Fascism and Cinema series that's going to be coming in. And then we also have the continuation of an interview that began at the Atlanta Film Festival this year. And that's going to be it for this episode. Thank you very much. And as always, check out my work at www.sonic-cinema.com.